This is OTB AM.
Let's tell you something about Nathan now. I think he said the other night, I was listening to his commentary, actually, I got the first half of his commentary the other night. Great reader of a stat, he's just not a great reader of the game. And that's not something that I thought about. I was thinking it when I was driving. I was thinking, he's a great man for a stat, but, oh, come on.
OTB AM, Ireland's only sports breakfast show, weekdays from 7:30 AM, only on OTB Sports Radio. Live 24/7 on the OTB Sports app. The OTB Podcast Network.
The News Round on Off the Ball.
With Gillette, we don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.
This is News Talk.
All right, you're welcome along. It's Thursday's Off the Ball. Nathan with you until 10 o'clock this evening. Coming up after 8, we're going to chat to Noel Healy, the now former Dublin footballer, five-time All-Ireland winner, Footballer of the Year back in 2017. She has retired at the age of 30. She spent the last year on the front line as a doctor as well, so a lot to talk to her about. That coming away after 8 o'clock. Lots of football as well. John Giles will give his take on the Super League. That's coming up at 7:30. We'll chat about Jose Mourinho's sacking as well, and also look ahead to Leeds against Manchester United, which is our live game here on Off the Ball on Sunday afternoon. Matt Lawton will join us on the football show. He and his colleague Martin Ziegler in the Times very much to the fore in breaking the story about the Super League, and they've some fascinating details today as well about how it all fell apart over the weekend and into Monday and Tuesday, so he'll talk to us about that after 9. And Adam Pope as well, who is the Leeds United correspondent with The Athletic, he'll talk to us about Leeds this season and where they go next potentially during the summer. 53106 is the text number at Off the Ball if you want to get in touch. Joe Malloy is with us. Good evening, Joe.
Gents, evening, how are we doing?
Oh, that is a sunny Malloy household. I see Anna McGraw. It's one of those nights. I just want to get out of here. Will you take over for the evening, Joe? It looks glorious out there.
It is beautiful. It makes a hell of a difference. I do remember, Richie, I think it was about, what, 3-4 weeks ago, you were suddenly in sunlight for the first time at this time.
Man, I didn't need my fancy ring light like one of those influencers on Instagram. I had what's called natural sunlight, apparently. We do get it from time to time here. And still, like, it's beaming in my window here to my left, and it's it makes all the difference for the noggin.
Just been thinking, Joe, we got to Thursday and there's been a big story in football over the last few days about the Super League, and I've just been waiting all week to know what Joe thinks about it.
Man, I've very little to say about it at this stage. I'm all talked out. I do get windows where I can ignore it. Like, if you're watching the website, Richie is putting up stories constantly, all the breaking news, as well as doing the bulletins. So I suspect he hasn't been able to tune out at all. I mean, I've no regrets. It was just an amazingly exciting, interesting, crazy, bonkers story. So
when was the last time there was as crazy an off-field story? I was thinking, remember the day that Abu Dhabi bought Manchester City and it was deadline day and the yellow tracker had Manchester City interested in buying Lionel Messi, Cristiano Ronaldo and Carlos Tevez. I thought, whoa, something's going on here.
Yeah. Oh, it beats that by miles, doesn't it?
The delay, did you know what, for a sheer, and like a rushing around and trying to find out what was happening, Delaney's little excursion to Gibraltar when he found himself a new position on the FAI board, that was right up there in terms of trying to scramble and ascertain what was going on. And is he leaving? Is he not? He's got this new role. What's he going to do? Is there any chance of getting a comment out of him? That was a whirlwind kind of 48 hours as well.
Well, I was there that night in Gibraltar, and it was a difficult situation as the news was obviously breaking, and as we now know from Champagne Football, it was developing in the plane on the way home. And I drove back to Malaga after the match that night in Gibraltar, and as I was getting into my hire car in Gibraltar, there was a lizard in the back seat. A little lizard that disappeared when I turned on the light. So I had to drive the whole way back knowing that this little lizard was somewhere within the car. Pounce at any stage.
Was it one of those little geckos?
It was a lizard. It was getting bigger by the second, Richie.
One of those little tiny little cute little geckos that you kind of want to pick up and put in your pocket.
Teeth. Anyways, that's my main memory that night.
There's an appropriate metaphor in there somewhere. So we have talked at length all week. The people want it. Give us the Nathan Murphy take on this whole debate.
I feel like I've already been on this week talking about it as well. You've just forgotten at this stage. I, in one way, can't believe that it became such a big story, that it became arguably the biggest footballing story in English football for, you know, a decade, if not more, at this stage, considering it had been spoken about for so long, considering, like, we grew up even in the year of the Champions League developing with a Super League, this magical thing where the best teams would just play each other all the time. So when it finally emerged on Sunday, and we were talking about it during the live game and you were covering it at that stage, I was wondering, you know, this is going to drag on for weeks, for months before we have any sort of real development. So for it to explode in the way it did, I was quite shocked. But I think it was the impact on the football pyramid that became so obvious so quickly of, well, what is the point of the Premier League if nobody can progress from it? So what is the rest of football going to do? Why would Sky pay for the Premier League if none of it really matters anymore? And then what is the point of English football all the way down? And once people established that, I think they were like, well. And also there's a residual anger, I think, that has built up towards all those clubs from their own supporters for various different reasons. There's an anger in the world right now because of what we've gone through over the last year, and it all just seemed to spill over the past 4 or 5 days.
The sheer vacuum of information from the actual clubs themselves, I think, is what stung the most, and what turned this into a story is when the people involved aren't willing to tell you anything about it beyond these really kind of bland statements. Like, you'd be old enough to remember, Nathan, when the Premier League was founded or when it was being discussed. Like, this thing was kind of openly being discussed, and you'd read about it in Shoot magazine or Match magazine on a week-by-week basis. You'd see the likes of Irving Scholar or Alan Sugar or Peter Swales or David Moores and Peter Robinson at Liverpool filing in and out of hotels in London to discuss this thing, and they'd stop and talk to the cameras or they'd give a quote here and there. There were no quotes. There was no information from the people involved as to why they were getting involved in all of this. And I think that's what built up and what I guess was the match to the kind of oil of the hatred and the annoyance and all that kind of stuff of the fans. And yeah, if you just leave a vacuum of nobody speaking and let Florentino Perez make a gobshite of himself on Spanish radio and TV, it doesn't make it look like the most stable basis for anything.
The whole Spanish media environment's a bit strange, isn't it? I know we've touched on the show a few times about Marca and the newspapers and how they work, but this midnight talk show that has massive listenership, I know they have a different body clock in Spain and they have their nice siestas and all that, but like midnight? Like, is this something we should be worried about on Off the Ball, that suddenly it'll be, hey lads, we got a brand new slot for you and all the big guns are going to come on, but it's at midnight?
Yeah, it is interesting. It's also amazing how beholden they were to the owners. Like, even in Barcelona, I was just checking up, because this was taken down in England, be under no illusions. This was not taken down in Italy. This was not taken down in Spain. Like, the front page I was reading in whatever the Barcelona newspaper is, like, we know how Marca is beholden to Madrid or whatever, but even in Barcelona, the front page there was 350 million now, as in the signing on fee. As in, like, this was not outrage. There was no Gary Neville. There were no players. Like, do you think Messi said anything about this? Of course he didn't. He couldn't care less, you know. So the players said nothing. The media were kind of like, 350 million. Barcelona kind of broke, as we know. So, yeah, the Spanish media landscape, like an abomination, really, you would have to say, and didn't question this at all. I have one other thing that I wanted to get your thought on. The more I think about the English situation, because I know Manchester United fans turned up at Carrington today and Solskjaer and Carrick had to like talk them down and everything. Of all the English clubs, of all the big six now, I had been saying this week, oh, Neville's really going to lead the charge against the Glazers. They are the ones in the most trouble. I'm now rethinking that. The more I think about the Glazers, they are shrewd, awful money men. They are scavengers, as Neville said, in many ways. But they haven't run the club into the ground. Like, they are still paying 80 million for Harry Maguire. They're still paying out 60 million for Fernandes. They are still putting their money where their mouth is a little bit, and the club is turning a profit. The more I think about it, the Cronkies at Arsenal are the worst. Like, they bought the most profitable club in world football, and they put no money in. And they have just let the thing drift into abject nothingness. I think if any fan base had warrant to stage a revolution, it would be the Arsenal fans. Unfortunately, you know, they're like not bothered.
Yeah, I did ask Matt Lawton about that. We recorded it earlier on about at the height of this on Tuesday, when emotions were really boiling over and it was starting to fall apart, and Sky Sports News at the end of the game, or Sky at the end of the game, got Neville and Carragher on from home, and Gary Neville's in that sort of weird student apartment type look place that I presume was maybe a hotel room or something, where there's Jimi Hendrix in the background smoking a spliff. I thought, all right, fair enough. This is where Gary Neville is based right now. But they were both like, this is the end for the owners. This has to be the end for the American owners. There's no way back. We have to force them to sell this club. The link with the supporters is broken. So we need to find someone to take over. And I was asking Matt Lawton, well, you know, is that a possibility? And you know, who can they sell to? Because the 50+1 model is but a dream in English football. So are you going from one horror show to another, one billionaire to another, who'll all want to make as much money as they possibly can? And he was saying he thinks FSG have enough goodwill in the bank, despite the consistent mistakes they've made, that they will be okay. And because they ended the 30-year wait and the investment they've made, the Glazers, it's going to be impossible for any Glazer to ever set foot in Old Trafford again. But is that enough to force them to actually sell the club? Who knows if they can continue to make the profit. And we didn't get into Stan Kroenke, but I think you're right. And Arsenal fans are probably sick to their back teeth of raising this point. They're just not at that level of Liverpool and Manchester United that their complaints aren't heard as loudly.
They've no intention to be. I mean, the Glazers not turning up at Old Trafford. When you consider old Malcolm never bothered between 05 and his passing in 2014 once to go and see the club he bought, I think they'll get by. Yeah, I don't know. It's so interesting. The whole thing has been just, and the swiftness of it. I mean, geez, it was made for the modern day news cycle.
Brian has texted in 53106. Nothing still tops Saipan. Well, listen, nothing will ever. Yeah. I really hope in many ways that nothing ever tops Saipan. I'm not sure we'll be able to cope.
What we all have to look forward to is next year on the 20th anniversary.
Oh, great. Jeez, there's some easy summer nostalgia. There's some summer nostalgia. Premier League season wraps up. Sunday afternoons, Joe.
No need to ask me about my annual league plans.
Coming to you live, Off the Ball Roadshow. Nick McCarthy and Roy Keane reunited.
The dream.
Everybody vaccinated.
If we can I sow the seed now? I think as a grouping, if we can do a week's worth of shows live from the beautiful island of Saipan, I'm on board.
I am absolutely on board.
100%, yeah.
Cullum says, I'm watching on the stream. Poor Joe looks like he's been blinded by a nuclear detonation somewhere out in the suburbs.
The more I think about it, I want to go to the pothole where Steve Finnan almost broke his ankle.
We could do a Phoenix from the Flames style actual recreation over there. And at this stage, we could probably, if the money was right, we could probably bring Roy back.
Listen, if the money's right, Nathan.
And we bring Mick on the flight as well. He might be perfectly happy. Can you cop on and start the show 5 hours later like normal human beings, says Chris, who's presumably living in Spain somewhere. And just off this, a real football man writes, lads, absolutely nothing to do with the Super League, but Bolton in line for automatic promotion. Owen Doyle has scored 18 this season. League 2, fairly competitive. I'd have him in the Ireland squad for the friendlies. Owen Doyle, every time I turn around, every season is at a different club, scoring 18 goals for them.
Yeah. He's one of the most consistent lower league performers I think we've probably ever had in this country. Like, he's gone over to England and people look at, you know, obviously players operating in the Premier League or maybe the Championship and view that as success. But the career that Owen Doyle has actually forged out for himself over in England has been absolutely remarkable and deserves the utmost credit for it, to be honest.
We should get him on the show.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, 100%.
Somebody listening in, go organise that next week. Let's get Owen Doyle on the show. We'll do that.
We really underestimate those lads making a career at that level. It's just such an unbelievable level.
The news round and Off the Ball on News Talk is with thanks to Gillette. We don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters. Let's start the news round, Richie. The team has been announced for Ireland, Italy on Saturday, and a bit of a surprise.
Yeah, an interesting performance from Ireland head coach Adam Griggs today. He's made three changes for Saturday's game against Italy in the Women's Six Nations in association with Guinness. Amy Lee Murphy-Crowe, Stacey Flood and Brittany Hogan come into the starting 15, all in line for their first test starts. Lauren Delaney, Hannah Tyrrell and Claire Malloy are the players to make way. The uncapped Grace Moore could make her Ireland debut off the bench. Griggs says former captain Malloy's absence is not down to fitness.
No, Claire Malloy is not injured. So we had a conversation with Claire earlier on in the week just around, you know, some of the performances, and she's got things that she can still work on at the moment. And around those players coming into the starting side, I suppose, you know, over the last 6 months we've talked about the depth of this side and building competition. And, you know, I wouldn't be true to my word if we weren't giving some of these other players a shot. And certainly when you look at Stacey, I think in the last two games she's come on and made a real difference for us. And in that team position, it's really important that throughout the week you take control and ownership of how the team is steered. And Hannah's had that opportunity the last couple of weeks. And this week we thought it was a good time to see how Stacey goes leading the team. So similar with Brittany. I think, you know, her two performances, she's been really good coming off the bench as well. And we see her as a bit of a hybrid that can cover that second row, but also probably her future is also as a back rower. She's very dynamic, good ball carrier, and really solid at the breakdown. So it's about giving these players an opportunity to start and obviously perform themselves.
It's a big, big call, Joe. Claire Malloy would be commonly regarded as Ireland's best player.
Yeah, yeah, it's interesting. And you change your 10 as well. Mm. That's no small thing. So, look, I tuned in like a lot of people last week, really looking forward to the game, and France certainly delivered. Ireland did not deliver, and there is a gulf there, and they're not match sharp in the way that the French are, but they still under-delivered. And so it was a bit of a non-event as a contest. So thus far, we've had Ireland whooping Wales, non-event, Ireland losing badly to France. This actually could be a really good game at the weekend against Italy. Evenly matched, a lot on the line, be really good for Ireland's rankings for future events to finish third. So, you know, I think this will be the game of the championship from an Irish point of view. And it, yeah, team news interesting.
Yeah, with a full coverage on Saturday's Off the Ball as well. Aisling O'Reilly and Alison Miller are going to be at the game for us, so you'll have previews and analysis. It's been a strange all week around the Ireland team, Richie. Obviously, the fallout from the defeat. And Adam Griggs has been in the spotlight for a couple of different reasons. They haven't put up any players for interview over the course of the week. And also, there was a bit of confusion about some comments he made about who's running the women's game in the country.
Yeah, Griggs has attempted to offer some clarity around his recent inability to say who is running the women's game in Ireland. When pressed on the matter earlier this week, Griggs claimed he didn't know, but he opened his press conference today with an explanation.
I just thought it was important. I fielded a question on Tuesday just around the domestic game and who was in charge. And On reflection, I probably wasn't as clear as I could have been. So I think it's important to acknowledge the work that Collie McEntee, Amanda Greensmith and the domestic game do in running our pathway and also our interprovincial series. So hopefully that can clear up some of the comments that were made.
If we want to open the floor there, Sinead Kassan, you're there if you want to kick us off.
Yeah, just on that, Adam, why was there kind of that confusion that time, last Tuesday?
I think I probably got put on the spot a little bit, and I didn't want to come across that we were, you know, putting it under any one person. I think, as I stated, it's the whole organisation running this thing, and obviously there's different departments that will take care of different parts of the organisation. So it's just something that I thought. At the time, obviously on the spot, probably wasn't as clear as I could have been.
Is that cleared up, Joe?
To a point. In credit, Sinead Kassan, straight in, would expect nothing less. I'm not letting you away with that. You can sort of be fair and see some sense of, oh, look, I didn't want to just put it at one person when a lot of people feed into it. I don't know enough, to be honest, about what's going on here and would we be better off maybe if we did have certainty? If there was a, this is the person and they're going to be judged on this and that's their priority above all else, you know? Maybe that's a better way forward. But I'm not too sure the inner workings. They're never like that open about this stuff anyway. Fiona Steed was on Monday and went into great depth, and she painted quite a positive picture, I think, about the development work being done at underage level in her neck of the woods, and that like very, very soon, gone will be the days of players who just started playing rugby when they hit their 20s or something, you know, that there'll be more and more underage players and there'll be pathways through and all that kind of stuff. And she was positive. At the same time, I've heard very negative summaries of where the women's game is at grassroots level. I'm sure the truth is somewhere in between. It's all, even, you know, with the football stuff, soccer, it's really hard to get a handle on where grassroots stuff is.
Yeah, and that's before you even get into what happens when those players develop and are ready to be internationals, and are they going to be given the opportunity to be professionals and to be able to compete on a level playing field in Six Nations. There's loads of great analysis of that on the Six Nations show in association with Guinness, which is up online now. Alan Quinlan was on today alongside Niamh Briggs and Valerie. You can catch that on all our social channels. We play some of that later in the show as well. Of course, Richie, when we're talking about the chaos of world football over the last few days, League of Ireland circles, it's, hey, we do this every week.
Absolutely. We do this every day. Waterford have denied today that manager Kevin Sheedy and his assistant Mike Newell have left the club. Reports of a training ground bust-up this morning led to speculation the former Republic of Ireland midfielder had actually quit, but Waterford say Sheedy remains in charge for Saturday's SSE or Tristy Premier Division visit of Longford Town to the RSC. Derry City, meanwhile, are on the lookout for a new boss after Declan Devine was relieved of his duties this morning. The County Stripes sit bottom of the table after a winless start to the season, just two draws to their name under Devine this term.
I feel like I'm having a production meeting on air, but Mike Newell is someone we should be talking to as well. Mike Newell!
He's not afraid of talking.
Side. He talks too much, it seems.
Yeah.
Get him before he goes.
Like, if somebody would be keen on talking, I'd imagine it's Mike Newell, given I think he's up to 3 sendings off so far this season in the SSE or Tristy Premier Division out of 6 games. Mind you, so yeah. He seems
what is it about Waterford and the RSC that makes these very talented 90s Premier League footballers arrive there and just get really angry very quickly?
Yeah, I would speculate that one or two of them aren't actually that good in terms of management, and there's been records to kind of prove that out of former Waterford managers' subsequent work back in England. But the club at the moment seems to be mirroring the situation at Swindon Town. Both of them owned by Lee Power, and neither of them seemingly in a healthy position in terms of how they're managed and how they're run at the moment. So I'd imagine there are Waterford fans listening in this evening pulling their hair out wondering what is actually going on at the club, because talk of fallings out with Brian Murphy, one of their most experienced players, and you know the situation with Newell being sent off so frequently this season, it's not good. Like, it doesn't make the club look good, doesn't make anybody involved in the running of the club look good, and it's put them very much on the back foot in terms of survival this season.
Tell Joe that Arsenal fans are very upset about the Super League. They're a little embarrassed with where their club are as a club to be included in it. If he's going to have condescending opinions about it, maybe you should actually talk to some Arsenal fans and get an educated opinion. Well, yourself.
How was I condescending?
They should be the most angry.
They should.
Maybe nobody is paying attention to them.
In fairness to them, they had a fans forum today, like, and they hauled Josh Kroenke, who's Stan's son, along with the chief executive, in front of this meeting today, and they fielded questions about the Super League, and they gave them the answer that this was a train that was leaving the station, and we felt at the time that we had to be on the train rather than not. And they asked, they were throwing a lot of questions, pardon me, of saying, are you going to sell up, essentially, because clearly you don't have the wherewithal or the knowledge of English football to actually be running this club. And Josh seemed quite insistent that the Kroenkes would not be selling up anytime soon, that he's going to set up a base himself in London and deal more regularly, more frequently with the Arsenal fans and listen to them more seemingly than they have done in the past. So at least they kind of put some of the top brass up in front of a select group of supporters, trusts, etc. today. But the Arsenal situation is one that's going to take investment, and that's ultimately what they need is to plough money into that team and give them some identity.
To be fair, if I was condescending, I apologise to the Arsenal fan. I think maybe actually what's very striking about their case is, who is there, Neville, who's at the Glazers? Who is, like, and Liverpool have a bunch of agitators who will go at the club if they're out of line.
Who was Neville at the Glazers before last Sunday?
Not especially, the first time, to be fair. Especially. And it was interesting. He said he felt complicit. But, like, there were enough people at the Glazers. And you see, United are such a big story. And the protests, the green and yellow scarves. So that was all kind of knocking around a little bit. United are always going to be focused on. Arsenal probably to an extent are a tier below a United in terms of coverage.
Yeah.
But who is the former player that has really... And you see, United as well.
Does Ian Wright talk about it?
Yeah, to be fair to Ian Wright, there was a couple of videos recorded in his car this week he put out on Twitter.
Previous to this week, Rich, do you know, like, has he been having a go at Kroenke? And because, like, he's fairly involved working with the club as well.
That's the thing. The direct criticism, you will be hard pressed to find people who directly criticize the owners. And even, like, with the Liverpool former players, they'll make vague allusions to things not being right and stuff not being run properly, but they won't necessarily call it John W. Henry or...
Well, even away from that, Richie and Joe, away from the former players, if you look at Liverpool and Manchester United and say the journalists who cover the club specifically, so somebody like Andy Mitten, who is a self-confessed super fan of Manchester United, but analyzes the club with United We Stand and has been incredibly critical of the Glazers. Mm. You have people who are very prominent like that, the people behind the Anfield Rap, or somebody like Tony Evans, who's been to the forefront of criticism for Liverpool behind the scenes. Arsenal at times has been Arsenal TV. I know you have somebody like Arsblog who does a lot of good work there, but Arsenal, it's that lighter, you know, we're angry about something, but a lot of the time their anger was directed at Arsene Wenger, maybe because he was seen as a front for what was happening behind the scenes. But I remember being at I think the only time I've ever been at a Premier League match where I've seen supporters of a club fighting with each other was at the Emirates when Arsenal were 4-1 down at home against Liverpool in one of Wenger's final seasons, and they were at each other about pro-Wenger, anti-Wenger, but rarely it seemed against the owner.
That's a good point, yeah. The Wenger thing did take over for a while. Now, look, I was under no illusion they liked Silent Dan. You know, the nickname never felt like that much of a compliment either.
No. Time for one more story, Richie.
Yeah, GAA have confirmed that Allianz Football League finals will only be played if the sides involved aren't playing in the Championship the following week. Groups are split north and south geographically, with the top two in each subdivision progressing to semi-finals. I hope you're still following. Finals weekend is scheduled for June 19th and 20th. There is to be no knockout phase to Division 1 of the Allianz Hurling League this season. Instead, there will be joint winners, or if the teams meet in the Championship, similar to what we saw late last year, that match will serve as a league decider. The top teams, in Divisions 2 and 3 will be crowned champions, with no finals played.
We text in saying you should have Richie and Joe reenact the dog walk outside the mock Tudor pile if we're doing a Phoenix from the Flames of Saipan. The question is, as the texter says, who's Kino and who's Triggs?
You can have a lend a Lucy to be Triggs if you want.
On that note. Go enjoy the sunshine, lads.
Cheers, Nathan.
All right, see you, boys.
All right, so the plan is John Giles coming up at 7:30. We'll have Noel Healy looking back on her career with the Dubs coming up from 8:00. And then on the football show, we'll have more reaction to the Super League, and we'll be talking Leeds United as well. But John Giles up next.
The News Round on Off the Ball.
With Gillette. We don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette. Made of what matters.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.